Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to firehouse.com.
Welcome to Training and Tactics Talk. I'm your host, Douglas Klein. And with Training and Tactics Talk this month, we're going to focus on looking at developing a complete training program for your department. Let me remind you, though, that Training and Tactics Talk is hosted by RadioFirehouse.com, and we encourage your questions and comments. So just email them to radio@firehouse.com. We'll be glad to entertain those and get those up and maybe even have you on the show. Again, with Training and Tactics Talk, we're focusing on the best training and getting the best information and the most current information to our troops in the field so that we keep them safe and focused on everyone going home. So I'm excited about what we're talking about today, and this is going to be very applicable to not only training officers but officers in general as we begin taking a look at really putting together a comprehensive training program for the year. And we're going to focus on two components of that. We're going to take a look at the company level as well as the department level. So I want to start out and let's talk a little bit about what is training and talk about training today's fire service. As we get into this, and we know that there's a couple things that fit. Basically, training programs are what balances us for enhanced effectiveness. It gives us the ability to regroup or rebuild or start anew. It allows us to focus in on our core values and our skill sets, and especially some of those predicated skills that are just so imperative that we have. Today's fire service, though, is a lot different than what it was 20 years ago. There's a lot changed. And I make the comment from time to time, oh, what's changed yet stayed the same. And when we look at it, we're more dynamic than we've ever been. We're focused on a lot of different skill sets. We're focused on, you know, a bigger picture of making the fire service really the best that it can be, and tackling every area that we have to truly tackle in, you know, getting the skills and getting the training, getting the knowledge to our people as they enhance their levels of abilities to function. So let's talk about some of the demands that we have. We've got a lot of technical advances that's beginning to occur. We are seeing, you know, the 2010 time period put out some new NFPA standards. OSHA has, you know, always, you know, evolved and changed with their regulations. They're beginning to adopt and pull on board NFPA standards. We're looking at some of the sophistication, not only in the way that buildings are being built and equipment's being made, but how the two have to interact with the tactical strategies that we deploy. And, of course, there are some expectations from the public that we have to look at as well. So our demands have really changed a lot. So if we say training perspectives, you know, or even the perception of what training is, what would we say it is? Well, my thought, the first thing that comes to my mind is training is about attitude. And attitude is so important. It's, you know, just the key thing that I think sticks out. A couple things about this attitude in training we got to look at. First of all, is your training realistic? Is it progressive? Is it interesting? Is it innovative? And most of all, is it focused on meeting the objective set forth by the mission statement? So that kind of rolls me into saying that training is our significant constant, and it is truly a significant constant as an organizational level, but it also is the glue, or, you know, the pieces that, you know, hook everything together at a company level. So let's talk a little bit about looking at conducting some company training. And when I say company training, it's whether it's your squad or the group that you're assigned to in a volunteer department, whether it's your station, whether it's your shift, you know, that you're working with. Because when we start talking about training, you know, there's a large, diverse group of people out there in the fire service. We've got our paid organizations, which, you know, may have 100, 200, 300,000 people, down to the point that we have, you know, the 20-member department volunteer stations that, you know, have to work through this, that they've got their people broken up. But when we look at it, you know, one of the obstacles that we run into with training, especially at a company level, is getting everybody involved. And I know that, you know, when we look at this, you know, the first obstacle in this is going to be the planning. You know, the officer must implement any department-wide training that comes down to company level, whether it's, you know, a small department, whether it's a large department, they've got to do that. You know, in the process of this, they're going to have to conduct a needs assessment on their personnel, truly looking at what do they need to do the job that they're doing, what do they need to go to the next level or to advance to a higher level of functioning. And this is, you know, conducting that needs assessment and looking at a true gap analysis. So the element in most departments that makes this very difficult is the makeup. And, of course, a lot of times you don't see these people on a real consistent basis. And that becomes hard when you're trying to train them, you're trying to evaluate them. And, you know, this is just, unfortunately, the nature of the business when it comes to smaller departments. With larger departments, I know that that still occurs. One of the prime examples is, you know, with some of our companies and the fact that we're dropping down to three- and four-man companies, a lot of times, you know, people are traveling, you know, from one station to the next. And let's say we bring a new firefighter on and we put them on a ladder company. And they're assigned to that ladder company, and they're the new person, they're the firefighter, they're the extra really firefighter on the truck. And let's make that ladder company one that's fairly specialized to where you have to have two drivers. We're going to make it a tiller. Well, if you're running a three-man company on a tiller, which is common, that's happening across the United States, you know, even in a large department, it becomes difficult because that additional firefighter, that extra firefighter is going to be, you know, shipped out or he's going to be traveled out. You know, and some places that occurs, some places it doesn't. But let's relate that to the volunteer department when you have, you know, an individual that's coming in. You know, with this, you know, they don't have a training bureau to help keep up with some of this stuff. But they're having to work around people's schedules, you know, with family, with events that have to go on, you know, with the department, with having a personal life, you know, with children and ball games and activities and church. And, you know, and we have a job that we have to go to as well, you know, as volunteers. So trying to fit all this in takes a little bit of scheduling and planning. So that's one of the first things we have to do is truly look at that planning. And to get people in, when they're coming to, you know, a training session, whether, you know, it's a volunteer department or whether they're going to a training, you know, session in a 2,000-member department, you know, part of what's going to grab their attention or whether they're going to get anything out of this is whether it's realistic and interesting, whether it's challenging them, whether it's, you know, meeting their needs, or whether it's just, you know, sitting with a continuous process over and over and over again. Well, redundancy is good in working your skills, but you can be very innovative in working those skills in a multitude of different ways. So we got to look at that, because training, again, is our significant constant that's there. It's what we're going to work on. It's the balance that we focus with. So when we begin looking at training, you know, as an overall view, you know, there's, you know, one of the big obstacles. Another one is finding the time to get all this that's accomplished. Now, let's talk a little bit about what training really has to be. I mentioned that anything that's coming from a department level, and we need to bump up to the department level now from a company level, and truly look at this and say, there's a lot that has to occur, and what drives that? A lot of people don't understand everything that fits into what drives a training program overall, what makes it the most effective it can be. Well, we have to look at this from a couple of different angles. And, of course, I want people to open your eyes now and get that 360-degree multidimensional view, is that we're looking at ISO. Well, obviously, ISO drives a lot of what we do for our training. There's very specific guidelines of the types, the hours, you know, the different, you know, dimensions of training that we have to do to get maximum points for ISO rating. That's very important. But that's tailored around a little bit of what is important for a training. So let's look at a little bit of that. Whether you're, you know, a large department, whether you're a small department, it doesn't matter. If you're looking at ISO, you have to have firefighter training. That's, you know, a given. You have to have your firefighter training. You have to have your driver training. And, of course, there's hours set to that. There's hours towards hazmat. There's hours, you know, specifically on other training dimensions that we want to look at, one being an officer level. Probably one of the larger gaps that we've had in the fire service is, you know, we don't have as much officer training, or the officer training that existed, you know, as we develop people through. There are, you know, the fire officer 1, 2, and 3s. There's some of the National Fire Academy stuff that's out there, which is extremely underutilized. We don't tap into the resources that we truly, you know, could tap into and be, you know, utilizing from a day-to-day basis. So when we begin looking at these particular concepts and we begin looking at firefighter concepts for that, we've got a lot to truly look at. And let's start with just the firefighter training in general. And when we start talking about firefighter training in general, you know, there's 240 hours that has to occur in firefighter training. And basically, when you break that down, it's 20 hours a month. And I know a lot of people just had a heart attack on me, but it's correct. It's 20 hours a month that, you know, we are looking at for, you know, firefighter training to get maximum credit on our firefighter training. So if we're truly looking at getting maximum credit, there's a lot that goes into, you know, truly developing firefighter training with 20 hours per month. So how do you get that accomplished? Well, that's very difficult, especially in a small department. First of all, let's be realist here and realize that, you know, in doing our training, we're not going to have that true 20 hours a month when we start talking about firefighter training. In a smaller combination department. It's very difficult even in a larger municipal department. So let's look at a calendar. I want you to begin to think about, I'm going to develop a training calendar for our entire year, and I want to try to meet all these objectives. And we're actually going to post something up. It'll be called the Virtual Fire Training Officer. That'll be a link that goes along with this podcast so that it helps you go back and truly look at this. But let's look at it as in a calendar month, in a month, and let's just pick the January 2010. There's basically 4 weeks in that month. About every third month, you get a fifth week that's thrown in there, the time period for that, the way it breaks out, to where it really is scheduled well. And you'll see that on this calendar that will be attached, you know, for the podcast. But each week, you have to have firefighter training. That's how we broke it out. So in week one of January, we put orientation, safety, and health. In week two, we put fire behavior. Week three, building construction. Week four, personal protective equipment. Each one of those weeks also gets an additional component added in. Here's the example. Remember I talked, there was firefighter training, driver training. You had to meet some of the OSHA standards. There was ISO standards that you had to get to. We'll talk about that on week five. There's rescue that we're doing. There's a lot of things that we have to fit into all this training that's very difficult. Plus, if you're running medical calls, there's a lot of stipulations that are, you know, on you now to meet, you know, the continuing education requirements set forth, you know, for emergency medical technicians and paramedics. So back to this, in week one, we had firefighter training. We also added officer training. So now that during that week, one of the things we're focusing on getting a couple of hours so that it goes out through the year, getting a couple of hours of officer training. In week two, we looked at, again, fire training, but we added in the driver training. You know, specifically in January, one of the topics that was put into this virtual training calendar was emergency vehicle operations or driving. Week three, we had our fire training again, but we added the medical or emergency medical training aspect as well to meet your continuing education, because each month you have to have so many hours, the way most systems are set up. A lot of people will set up in the first probably 4 to 5 months of the year mandatory training that goes with EMS. There are several topics that are mandated by most agencies that govern certification in that, and a lot of people will set it up in the first 5 months. Now, in week four, we added in the OSHA component, so that we all know that OSHA training sometimes is about the driest training we could get, but we added that in there as well so that it's a part of your training program. Now, January had 4 weeks. February, the same type of calendar you would see with 4 weeks, but in March of 2010, we'll show you that there is a fifth week. Well, to get in some of your drills that you need, we've added in drill time on week five along with your specialty training like rescue. That would fit in. Another thing that you could add in there would be in those months that you have to take, if you have a hazardous materials unit, you have to add those in. So you're going to have to kind of play this uniquely, and you can take the calendar and change it any way that you truly want to set it up for what's going to work best for your organization. But those are the things that are going to have to fit into a lot of these training calendars, and that's what we want you to identify. So when we think about what is training again, let's go back to that question. What is training and what does it mean to you? Well, as a person that is in management and looks at this from a perspective, it means that we have to get everything in that we're supposed to get in. It's required by law, that's required by standards, as we're trying to, you know, meet our strategic plan goals, as we're trying to meet our mission statement, our visions, as we're trying to develop people. That's what it means from a management perspective. What does it mean from personnel or the people, firefighter level perspective? Well, they're looking at it as these are all the things that we have to do, and it's very time consuming. And that's difficult to fit in. And let's think not so much from a career perspective necessarily. I mean, it's very difficult, you know, from a career because of all the, you know, other things that have to fit in there, from inspections to pre-entries to whatever type of emergency response level that you have to all the other aspects that go into making the fire service work from a career perspective. As a volunteer perspective, we're still trying to fit all this stuff in as well. So we're having to begin to look at how we can get training in and maximize the efficiency of training. Well, one of the thought processes that I throw out, and you'll be able to see some of this, it's part of a recent blog that's on the House of Training in the Firehouse blogs. It's called Conducting Company Level Training, and that's currently up for you to take a look at. And we're talking about trying to get everything in. And one of the things we have to not be afraid and be willing to actually utilize is canned training. Doing a customized training program is great. When you sit down, you develop it specifically to your department. You make your own outlines and your slides and make it very dynamic. If you've got that amount of time, you know, rock on, brother. You're doing the things that a lot of us only, you know, hope and wish we had the time to do. But there are customized training programs that are canned that are out there that can provide you with truly great information. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can, you know, quote-unquote, tweak the program to fit your organization. So that's one of the things that we're after. There are a lot of training resources that you can get to for little or no cost. And one organization that I'm heavily involved with and, you know, is doing a great job of and has always done a great job of training the fire service, that's the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, ISFSI. And you can go to that. If you're a member, you have access to a lot of curriculums and these CAN programs that are put together by other folks, and they're shared. You know, TRADE has a program that you can go to and pull this. There's a lot of information that's right here on firehouse.com. So there's, you know, a variety of ways that you can go to and pick up some of these, you know, training programs and be able to utilize them. Let's not get so hung up that we have to be in the formal classroom. You know, we don't have to be formal. There's a way to do a lot of this stuff. There are tons of articles that are out there in these trade magazines. There's podcasts that exist, you know, firehouse.com, the training and tactics talk that we're doing here. These are some absolutely fantastic ways to maximize the ability of your people to get good, solid training from, you know, people that are doing that particular level of training or have the passion and the expertise in those areas. So being able to tap into that allows people to utilize them at a more convenient time. So you're not necessarily disrupting schedule. Whether it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the morning, somebody's reading an article, listening to a podcast, viewing a webinar, really doesn't matter as long as they're focused in and getting the training that they need. And that's one of the things that we're trying to do is maximize efficiency. A perfect example of one of the ways that we're tapping into the quote-unquote non-traditional ways of delivering classrooms, you know, specifically here in High Point, where I work at, and some of the organizations and some of the collegiate-level programs that are going on throughout North Carolina, is we're tapping into what is known as a virtual classroom. Instead of tying, you know, the entire shift up for us through a day and trying to make moves and displacing companies to, you know, to make the standard of cover, you know, adequate and pulling companies out of service, we're leaving them in their districts and we're actually delivering programs via webinar style delivery. And we're using a particular program called DimDim. There's web meeting, there's GoToMeeting, there's a ton of those that are out there that you can utilize. We also, with the Southeast Association of Fire Chiefs, are seeing this become prevalent for officer training, specifically officer at a company level training that will be going on. That organization is going to begin doing podcasting. They're going to be, you know, doing some webinars that are focused on that. It'll be recorded. So you'll be able to go on these and actually see these programs. So there'll be links to them, and you can, you know, view them when it's convenient. So in a volunteer setting, you know, the individual that cannot make a Tuesday night meeting because they're working may be off on Thursday, but you can't conduct training on Thursday, could actually view, say, your officer training. Say that Tuesday night's your officer training night, but this one individual can't make it. But you could actually cut down the amount of time that they've got to be away from home. They can fit it into their schedule. They can do this. So that's part of what we want you to begin looking at. As we roll down through this and we think even further, evaluating what your department really needs. We've talked about a lot of avenues to get people to the point of, you know, setting up programs and doing that. But what does your group or your department or your company, either one of these are some of the questions that you can ask as you're beginning to put together a training program. The first thing in evaluating your training program, whether it's the company level or department level, you should be asking yourself, are you prepared for the changes that tomorrow is destined to bring? We know that tomorrow is going to be different from today. We know the dynamics. We know that all that's going to change. Good example. how they built buildings 10 years ago is drastically different from how they build them today. Even looking at the lightweight truss constructions, that's drastically changed in what we're seeing. That's within a very, very small time period. It's changed within the last 4 or 5 years. So we need to ask ourselves, are we prepared for the changes of tomorrow? Are we going to be able to handle what's coming down the pipe? Whether it's, you know, a change and we're going to be picking up emergency medical responses, whether we've got companies moving in that, you know, with growth or something that are going to have hazardous materials, are we capable? What are we going to be able to do? Are we truly giving our people what they need on the streets to be safe? The next is, are you prepared and willing to meet these new demands? If we think about how we trained yesterday versus today, it's going to be different, or it should be different. One of the thought processes that I see is that we get very hung up on continually doing what we did 10 years ago. A prime example is a lot of our strategies and our tactical considerations are based upon information. It's based upon what we really looked at 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's changing, and we have to evolve with that. So that's something else you need to take a look at when you're evaluating it. You also need to ask yourself, are we currently meeting our training needs? Most times this is a hard question because you hate to hear that we're currently not meeting the training needs that we have, and we're still trying to get ready for tomorrow. So those are questions that I want you to ask right off the bat. You also have to be somewhat of a visionary. And, you know, what's the future going to bring? What's the training needs going to be? So you got to try to get ahead of that. You got to be putting together a specific plan. A prime example of this, and we look at this very closely through accreditation. When we talk about the training pieces that are in some of our self-assessment components of the Commission on Professional Credentialing through the Center of Public Safety Excellence, with accreditation, part of what they ask for is a strategic plan for training. And we're looking at not only a year plan, but, you know, looking down for a multi-dimensional plan for in the future and development, those type of things. As we go through here, one of the most important questions that I'm going to have you ask yourself is, are you innovative, resourceful, and willing to supersede all existing boundaries? That innovative and resourceful, being able to go out, we've talked a lot about that, you know, here real recently, and I think that's important that we look at that. We're about the halfway point. When we come back, I want to talk a little more about attitude and getting your training program together. But at this point in time, we're about halfway. We need to take a break. You're listening to Training and Tactics Talk on Radio at Firehouse.com.
Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to Training and Tactics Talk on Radio at Firehouse.com. I'm Douglas Klein, your host, and we're talking about creating a training program and looking at developing a yearly calendar or a comprehensive yearly calendar in this podcast. Again, we want to invite our listeners to be involved and to send your questions in and actually get involved with Training and Tactics Talk. You're the important part. We're trying to make sure that we're giving you the right information to keep our troops safe on the streets so that everyone goes home. In the last segment that we were talking about, I told you we would come back and we would talk about an important question. And that question is going to be, does your department have the right attitude? And that's a hard question because everybody's got a lot of attitudes. And it doesn't matter where you're at, what organization, whether you're in the north, the south, the east, or the west, big department, small department, I can promise you, there's a lot of attitudes in your organization. And they vary from very positive, get-it-done type attitudes to the worst of the negative attitudes. So part of what I want you to ask yourself about yourself and your organization is, do you have the right attitude? about training, or is your training really something else? And that's something else we don't really want to get to, because it's not going to be good quality training. It's not going to be the right training. It's not going to be what's going to keep us safe. It's not going to be what's moving us forward. So one of the things that we need to say, if you've got a good attitude or getting this moving forward, you know, training today's fire service means that we're going to have to affect some change. And that means that we need to be proactive versus reactive. We need to be innovative versus traditional. We need to be resourceful and not cheap. We need to be very supportive instead of detrimental. And I've watched and seen through the years a lot of programs that were on the bad side. They were reactive. They were traditional. They didn't want to spend money. And of course, with all that tied together, they sometimes become very detrimental as people never progress. And I can relate to this in organizations to where people will progress for about, you know, 6 or 7 years maybe in the organization learning. And then after that, that, say, seventh year is repeated how many other years that they stay within an organization. And let's say it's a 30-year stint. You know, you've got 7 years of experience, and then you got the eighth year repeated 23 times. That's very bad, but we truly do see that in a lot of cases. And it's not just small organizations. A lot of times it's the larger organizations. So when we're looking at this, how do we get into trying to find the right attitude and get it going? Part of that in the attitude that we have to look at is your training having the right attitude? Is are you making it take a back seat to something? Is it the priority? You know, is there efficiency or readiness and the quality of service that we're providing to the citizens we protect? Is it there, or is it truly suffering because of what your training is? So how do we deal with this? You know, the first thing about it is we need to make training a priority. It should be the first thing that sticks out. One of the pieces that sticks out in my mind is that we should never let an individual's ghost come back to say that their training failed them. We should also say that if you're in the business, that you should be sharing knowledge because it's power. You should share with everyone, because failure to share or failure to, you know, teach someone or failure to learn could be that one piece that you never get that you really did need at some point in time. So we need to look at that. We need to see what's the priority. I see a statement quite frequently, and it's made by several of the folks that I'm associated with, you know, professionally and personally, is that you don't train till you get it right. You train till you can't get it wrong. So in looking at this and looking at developing a training calendar, let's get back to that and add our attitude back in here. Let's be very proactive and innovative and resourceful. If your people have good, sound NFPA 1001 firefighting skills, what we should be doing is taking those skills to the next level. We should be incorporating them into every little piece of our training. So let's take this orientation, safety, and health that we have in the first week of January. And we should be looking at not just, okay, what is orientation, what is safety, what is health, but what are we doing? Maybe that now you get down in the training, you begin looking or analyzing. There's nothing that says that training shouldn't be more than just sitting in a classroom looking at PowerPoints or looking at a video. Part of what we need to be doing is getting our folks into what we call the effective learning phase. And the effective learning phase in the psychology of learning and methodology is that they can truly problem solve, they can relate, they can make analogies to. So that's where we want to go with this, is that they can take the situations that are occurring and get to that point. It may be that your organization is not to that level. We're still trying to get people that can wear an SCBA and be, you know, effective in that and not be claustrophobic or be able to manage their air. It could be that we have people that don't understand building construction. it could be that now at the higher level for the effective learning, we're taking that building instruction, looking at fire dynamics, what's going to occur in that building, what's the most likely progression of fire, you know, what are our tactics going to have to be. So our firefighting training can go, you know, much deeper than just 1,001 firefighter 1 and 2, as we call it, training. It can get, you know, extremely deep into this. I mean, it can be all the topics that fit, you know, to the 1,001 standard, but you take it not from the cognitive level, unless you need to be there, but to an effective level if you can be there. And that's important. Our goal, or your long-term goal, should be in developing a training program and a training calendar annually, is to get your people to an effective level of learning. We also need to be looking at with our people is advancing them. If they're a firefighter, they should be, you know, advancing up and developing skills of, you know, apparatus operations and hydraulics and operating, you know, the vehicles efficiently. They should be starting to begin to develop some supervision skills and some leadership skills. As they progress through, you know, there's the officer training, and of course, you know, we got to go back and hit if we're doing specialties. There's a lot to learn there. You know, I particularly remember as we took on a new program when I was in Chapel Hill with the USAR, becoming part of a regional team that was a USAR team, and we had to advance our skills to a much higher level to function as, you know, that level of a team. And we spent, you know, our initial training to where you get your basic skills, quote unquote, almost a 3-week setting. It was about a 2.5-week setting time we did everything. But that got us started. But, you know, we had our monthly trainings. And when we went to that, we began moving from the cognitive level and being able to do our skills and the technical piece to the effective learning piece, to where we began putting it into scenarios or situations and developing those. So that's what we need to be doing with our calendar. We need to be evaluating exactly what we need. Now, let's go back. That's part of what we talked about in the first session, is that we need to be looking at our program saying, is it realistic? Is it progressive? Is it interesting? Is it innovative? These are all the things. As you continue to progress, your people are going to stay interested. So that's part of what we're doing. We're also preparing for the future. We talked about that, that it's important that we prepare for the future, because if you think about it, currently in the fire service, we're about to have a mass exodus. There's a large group of people that, you know, came in, quote-unquote baby boomers, that are going to exit out of the fire service in a very short period of time. What goes out with them is a tremendous amount of knowledge. If you think about it, this is the group that's exiting that was around when the 70s and the early 80s came and fires were very abundant. You know, today we don't run the level of structure fires or the fire-related incidents, you know, that are working incidents that they did back then. There's a lot of knowledge. There's a lot of change as we went through, you know, economic times and growth, that buildings were remodeled and rehabbed. So let's just use a perfect example of that, and I talked about building construction just a second ago in week 3 of January. How many of the people realize that a lot of your bowstring truss constructed roofs, a lot of that roofing was covered over and it's not visible now? And the only way that you would know that that roof existed is to really get into the anatomy of the building and analyze it during a pre-entry. But a lot of the people that are about to make that exit are leaving, you know, that would be leaving, possess that knowledge because they knew the building when it was built. They probably ran it. They've probably seen it. But how much of that's getting shared? And again, when I'm talking about, you know, the development of this program, it's utilizing your talents as well. Part of what I said is that your department has to have the right attitude. And is your training, or is it something else? You have to be proactive versus reactive, innovative versus traditional, resourceful versus cheap. All this stuff ties into developing and utilizing the people that are around you. So let's think about what we've got to have out of the students that are going to be in this. You're developing this training program around what do your students need to be? What do you got to get your students to be the quote-unquote student of the millennium, let's say? You know, getting these folks to where they're the best students they can be. Your program's going to have to be to where it keeps them motivated, where it keeps them energetic, where they're willing to, you know, just get in there. They're wanting to explore new ideas and new concepts. You've got to have that. They're wanting to get hands-on oriented. But how do you get that? Your training program and your instructors. That training program and the people that are going to deliver this training for you have got to be folks that are also going to be creative and resourceful. They got to be educated. And I'm going to use a phrase here called well-traveled. That means that they've necessarily didn't travel, you know, a lot of different places per se, but they have a lot of knowledge and experience from other dimensions. If they have, you know, experience in other realms, that's perfect. But you can get out and get this. And part of well-traveled is going to other organizations and seeing how they do things, researching things, you know, through the internet, through reading, through articles. Actually, if they've been involved with other organizations, is a great piece. But that's part of what we've got to get people into. So let's break this down a little more. When you get into this, part of what you have to have is, you know, a certain amount. Let's say you're focused now on not only all the things that we just talked about, but setting things up for, you know, meeting what's important to you for your ISO ratings and what's going to be important for you as an organization trying to move forward to be very progressive as you step into the next year, or what's going to, you know, move you towards what's going on in the future. So when we break this down and we begin looking at some of the processes, we have to really understand what's required. And that's a whole nother dynamic that most people don't even, you know, begin to explore. So with exploring that, let's talk a little bit about what's required. When we get into looking at specifically ISO, and that's the one that we want to get into the most, is because just plain and simple, that's, you know, how you're going to be judged, whether it's on a state level or whether it's going to be on a national level from the national ISO. So when we look at our firefighter requirements, ISO requires 20 hours per month, which equates to 240 hours per year. That's to get maximum points. Many organizations, like I said, will not be able to physically do that because of their schedules. I know the volunteer organization that I'm involved with Ruffin Fire Department, there is absolutely no way possible we can get 20 hours a month. We recognize that. That's important. To meet NFPA standards, they have no specific required hours, only the competencies. And if you get in there, those are the JPRs. So when you begin looking at developing your training calendar and you're looking for, you know, say a topic and I'll use fire behavior, you can go and look at what the JPRs are or what they say that firefighters should be able to do. If we go and look at the driver-operator requirements for you to be operating, you know, specific apparatus, ISO requires 4 3-hour sessions per year, 40 hours for new driver-operator training. So if you're already currently, quote-unquote, what is considered a driver, so you've got an individual and they're designated to be a driver of apparatus, then they specifically have to have, for maximum points of ISO, 4 3-hour sessions per year. Let's say that you got a firefighter that's going to start driving an apparatus. You want them, they're at that point that they can move forward and move up. Well, they should have a total of 40 hours of new driver-operator training. Makes sense. I mean, there's a level that's set there for competency. again, NFPA doesn't say how many hours you have. They have only the competencies that are there. In other words, the JPRs. OSHA has no specific requirements on that. When we go to looking at fire officer, again, NFPA or OSHA don't say you have to have so many hours, but they set out competencies. With ISO and your officer training for maximum points, it says 2 days per year for all officers, or a total of 12 hours. Well, in some volunteer settings, it's going to be very difficult maybe to do 2 days, unless you do a Saturday or Sunday, you know, and break it down. But, you know, we broke it out to get a total of 12 hours in the calendar there. For hazardous materials, there's nothing specific about NFPA, only competencies. ISO requires a half day or 3 hours per member of your department in radioactive training. OSHA requires 8 hours for incident commanders. Okay? If you there's an incident commander, they're supposed to have 8 hours of training. OSHA also requires that you have 8 hours a year for research, and that's at your highest level. So if you're looking at it, and let's say that you're an operations level, well, then you should have 8 hours a year for your research, you know, by OSHA standards for your certification. If you're an incident commander, you need that 8 hours for your level plus the additional 8 hours to meet OSHA requirements for that incident commander level. Again, ISO focuses only on one specific radiological training. If you get into rescue technician or those type of components, the specialties, ISO doesn't, you know, grade those. NFPA gives you specific competencies only. EMT is governed by the various states, so you have to look at those particular requirements that are there for that, and your group would know that. When it comes down to the other part that ISO looks at, it's drills. There's some specific training. ISO requires each building, if you're looking at this in training-wise, and to get maximum points, that you have 2 pre-entries per year for maximum points, or being in the buildings and updating pre-entries, or what we call pre-plans or pre-incident surveys. That's important. I mean, that's something that you look at because you're learning your buildings. Additionally, ISO looks at having 8 3-hour drills per year. Okay, so that's a lot of drills. We gave you 4 in there in the schedule with the week, you know, 5 that occurs 4 times throughout the year. Again, ISO requires 8 3-hour drills per year. In addition to that, you have to have 2 of those drills being night drills, and there has to be in that group 4 of them that are multi-company drills. So in your 8 drills, you're going to have 2 of them that are at night, and those 2 may be 2 of the 4 multi-company drills. So in other words, you don't have to have what would end up being 14 drills. It's a total of 8 drills per year. 2 of them have to be at night, and 4 of them have to be multi-company drills, and they're broken out in 3-hour segments, just so that's kind of clear. So when you're making your training schedule, you're beginning to see these pieces. Again, going back and kind of recapping at this point, there's a lot to training. But training is that significant constant. It's the threads that bind organizations together. It's what creates safety. It's what's going to create good customer service from the perspective of how we deliver it. The better trained we are, the better educated we are, the safer we can be, the better job we can do for our communities. Part of our problem, as we talked about, is time and being able to get everything in that we really need to get in. Let's be realists here. If you're in a career organization and you have lots of people, that may be possible. to meet all the training demands, to meet all those things, that may be possible. If you jump into smaller organizations, combination, volunteer departments, you know, me being involved in an organization that has 225 people, 14 stations, multiple companies, versus a single station, about 25 people, and all volunteer, I live in both realms. I know that we're not going to meet all of these specific objectives all the time. But what we are doing is we're escalating our training and moving it forward, trying to use a lot of different means of getting training hours, getting education, and putting it in our people, our personnel's hands, because we know that's the way that we enhance our ability to do our jobs and ultimately the safety that goes along with that. And, of course, part of what everyone should be focused on are the life safety initiatives from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation and making sure everyone goes home safe. Again, parts of that are there. There is a blog under the community blogs under the House of Training that focuses on that. We also have the training calendar that will be up to go along with the podcast. And we appreciate you joining us on Training and Tactics Talk. I'm Douglas Klein, your host, and we look forward to having you potentially on a future show. Again, if you have questions or comments, please email them in to radio@firehouse.com. We'll be glad to answer it. You're listening to Training and Tactics Talk. We look forward to having you on the show real soon.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.